Proslogion. Anselm of Canterbury. This volume is from the Christian Classic Collection published by BSB Publishing LLC. Copyright 2025 by BSB Publishing LLC. Anselm of Canterbury. Anselm of Canterbury, 1033 to 1109, was a brilliant theologian, philosopher, and archbishop whose quest for understanding made him one of the founding fathers of medieval scholasticism. Born in Aosta, in present-day Italy, he joined the Benedictine Abbey of Bec in Normandy, where his keen intellect and deep spirituality quickly made him a leading teacher and abbot. Eventually becoming Archbishop of Canterbury, Anselm combined pastoral courage with intellectual brilliance, standing boldly for the rights of the Church even against kings. His famous motto, "Faith seeking understanding, sit fides querens intellectum," captures his life's mission, to love God with both heart and mind. In his masterpiece Proslogion, he presented the ontological argument for God's existence, a philosophical proof that continues to spark debate today. His other great work, Cur Deus Homo, Why God Became Man, offered one of the first systematic explanations of the atonement, showing why only the God-man could reconcile humanity to God. Gentle, disciplined, and profoundly devout, Anselm of Canterbury united reason and reverence in a harmony few have matched. His legacy endures as a shining example of how intellectual rigor and deep faith together lead to the knowledge and love of God. Introduction. Anselm's Proslogion is philosophy on its knees, short enough to read in an hour, deep enough to echo for a lifetime. The Benedictine abbot, later Archbishop of Canterbury, calls his method faith-seeking understanding, prayer that dares to think, reason that dares to pray. In luminous paragraphs addressed directly to God, he asks to see the one he loves, yet cannot see. Along the way, he frames the argument that made history. God is that than which nothing greater can be conceived, and such a being cannot exist only in the mind, but must exist in reality. Yet the book is bigger than a proof. It is a meditation on divine goodness that lifts the humble, mercy that exceeds our measure, and joy that answers our restless desire. Read it slowly, preferably aloud. Let thought become worship and questions ripen into longing. By the final pages, you'll sense why Anselm wrote it all. Not to win an argument, but to be led from seeking to finding, and then to wonder. Chapter 1. Exhortation of the mind to the contemplation of God. It casts aside cares and excludes all thoughts save that of God, that it may seek him. Man was created to see God. Man by sin lost the blessedness for which he was made, and found the misery for which he was not made. He did not keep this good when he could keep it easily. Without God, it is ill with us. Our labors and attempts are in vain without God. Man cannot seek God unless God himself teaches him, nor find him unless he reveals himself. God created man in his image, that he might be mindful of him, think of him, and love him. The believer does not seek to understand, that he may believe, but he believes that he may understand, for unless he believed, he would not understand. Yup now, slight man, flee for a little while thy occupations. Hide thyself for a time from thy disturbing thoughts. Cast aside now thy burdensome cares, and put away thy toilsome business. Yield room for some little time to God, and rest for a little time in him. Enter the inner chamber of thy mind, shut out all thoughts, save that of God, and such as can aid thee in seeking him. Close thy door and seek him. Speak now, my whole heart. Speak now to God, saying, I seek thy face, Lord, will I seek. Psalm 27, verse 8. And come thou now, O Lord my God, teach my heart where and how it may seek thee, where and how it may find thee. Lord, if thou art not here, where shall I seek thee, being absent? But if thou art everywhere, why do I not see thee present? Truly thou dwellest in unapproachable light. But where is unapproachable light? Or how shall I come to it? Or who shall lead me to that light and into it, that I may see thee in it? Again, by what marks, under what form, shall I seek thee? I have never seen thee, O Lord my God. I do not know thy form. What, O Most High Lord, shall this man do, an exile far from thee? What shall thy servant do, anxious in his love of thee, and cast out afar from thy face? He pants to see thee, and thy face is too far from him. He longs to come to thee, and thy dwelling place is inaccessible. He is eager to find thee, and knows not thy place. He desires to seek thee, and does not know thy face. Lord, thou art my God, and thou art my Lord, and never have I seen thee. It is thou that hast made me, and hast made me anew, and hast bestowed upon me all the blessing I enjoy, and not yet do I know thee. Finally, I was created to see thee, and not yet have I done that for which I was made. O wretched lot of man, when he hath lost that for which he was made! O hard and terrible fate! Alas, what has he lost, and what has he found? What has departed, and what remains? He has lost the blessedness for which he was made, and has found the misery for which he was not made. That has departed without which nothing is happy, and that remains which, in itself, is only miserable. Man once did eat the bread of angels, for which he hungers now. He eateth now the bread of sorrows of which he knew not then. Alas, for the mourning of all mankind, for the universal lamentation of the sons of Hades. He choked with satiety. We sigh with hunger. He abounded. We beg. He possessed in happiness, and miserably forsook his possession. We suffer want in unhappiness, and feel a miserable longing, and alas, we remain empty. Why did he not keep for us when he could so easily that whose lack we should feel so heavily? Why did he shut us away from the light, and cover us over with darkness? With what purpose did he rob us of life and inflict death upon us? Wretches that we are, whence have we been driven out? Whither are we driven on? Whence hurled? Whither consigned to ruin? From a native country into exile, from the vision of God into our present blindness, from the joy of immortality into the bitterness and horror of death. Miserable exchange of how great a good, for how great an evil. Heavy loss, heavy grief, heavy all our fate. But alas, wretched that I am, one of the sons of Eve, far removed from God, what have I undertaken? What have I accomplished? Whither was I striving? How far have I come? To what did I aspire? Amid what thoughts am I sighing? I sought blessings and lo, confusion. I strove toward God and I stumbled on myself. I sought calm in privacy, and I found tribulation and grief in my inmost thoughts. I wished to smile in the joy of my mind, and I am compelled to frown by the sorrow of my heart. Gladness was hoped for, and lo, a source of frequent sighs. And thou too, O Lord, how long? How long, O Lord, dost thou forget us? How long dost thou turn thy face from us? When wilt thou look upon us and hear us? When wilt thou enlighten our eyes and show us thy face? When wilt thou restore thyself to us? Look upon us, Lord, hear us, enlighten us, reveal thyself to us. Restore thyself to us, that it may be well with us. Thyself, without whom it is so ill with us. Pity our toilings and strivings toward thee, since we can do nothing without thee. Thou dost invite us. Do thou help us. I beseech thee, O Lord, that I may not lose hope in sighs, but may breathe anew in hope. Lord, my heart is made bitter by its desolation. Sweeten thou it, I beseech thee, with thy consolation. Lord, in hunger I began to seek thee. I beseech thee that I may not cease to hunger for thee. In hunger I have come to thee. Let me not go unfed. I have come in poverty to the rich, in misery to the compassionate. Let me not return empty and despised. And if, before I eat, I sigh, grant, even after sighs, that which I may eat. Lord, I am bowed down and can only look downward. Raise me up that I may look upward. My iniquities have gone over my head, they overwhelm me, and like a heavy load they weigh me down. Free me from them, unburden me, that the pit of iniquities may not close over me. Be it mine to look up to thy light even from afar, even from the depths. Teach me to seek thee, and reveal thyself to me when I seek thee, for I cannot seek thee except thou teach me, nor find thee except thou reveal thyself. Let me seek thee in longing, let me long for thee in seeking, let me find thee in love, and love thee in finding. Lord, I acknowledge and I thank thee that thou hast created me in this thine image, in order that I may be mindful of thee, may conceive of thee, and love thee, but that image has been so consumed and wasted away by vices, and obscured by the smoke of wrongdoing, that it cannot achieve that for which it was made, except thou renew it and create it anew. I do not endeavor, O Lord, to penetrate thy sublimity, for in no wise do I compare my understanding with that, but I long to understand in some degree thy truth, which my heart believes and loves. For I do not seek to understand that I may believe, but I believe in order to understand. For this also I believe, that unless I believed, I should not understand. Chapter 2. Truly there is a God, although the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. And so, Lord, do thou, who dost give understanding to faith, give me, so far as thou knowest it to be profitable, to understand that thou art as we believe, and that thou art that which we believe. And indeed we believe that thou art a being than which nothing greater can be conceived. Or is there no such nature, since the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God? Psalm 14 verse 1. But, at any rate, this very fool, when he hears of this being of which I speak, a being than which nothing greater can be conceived, understands what he hears, and what he understands is in his understanding, although he does not understand it to exist. For it is one thing for an object to be in the understanding, and another to understand that the object exists. When a painter first conceives of what he will afterwards perform, he has it in his understanding, but he does not yet understand it to be, because he has not yet performed it. But after he has made the painting, he both has it in his understanding, and he understands that it exists, because he has made it. Hence, even the fool is convinced that something exists in the understanding, at least, than which nothing greater can be conceived. For when he hears of this, he understands it. And whatever is understood exists in the understanding. And assuredly that than which nothing greater can be conceived cannot exist in the understanding alone. For suppose it exists in the understanding alone, then it can be conceived to exist in reality, which is greater. Therefore, if that than which nothing greater can be conceived exists in the understanding alone, the very being than which nothing greater can be conceived is one than which a greater can be conceived. But obviously this is impossible. Hence there is no doubt that there exists a being than which nothing greater can be conceived, and it exists both in the understanding and in reality. Chapter 3. God cannot be conceived not to exist. God is that than which nothing greater can be conceived. That which can be conceived not to exist is not God, and it assuredly exists so truly that it cannot be conceived not to exist. For it is possible to conceive of a being which cannot be conceived not to exist, and this is greater than one which can be conceived not to exist. Hence, if that than which nothing greater can be conceived not to exist, it is not that than which nothing greater can be conceived. But this is an irreconcilable contradiction. There is then so truly a being than which nothing greater can be conceived to exist, that it cannot even be conceived not to exist, and this being thou art, O Lord our God. So truly therefore dost thou exist, O Lord my God, that thou canst not be conceived not to exist, and rightly. For if a mind could conceive of a being better than thee, the creature would rise above the Creator, and this is most absurd. And indeed whatever else there is except thee alone can be conceived not to exist. To thee alone, therefore, it belongs to exist more truly than all other beings, and hence in a higher degree than all others. For whatever else exists does not exist so truly, and hence in a less degree it belongs to it to exist. Why then has the fool said in his heart, there is no God? Psalm 14 verse 1. Since it is so evident to a rational mind that thou dost exist in the highest degree of all, why, except that he is dull and a fool? Chapter 4. How the fool has said in his heart what cannot be conceived. A thing may be conceived in two ways. When the word signifying it is conceived, when the thing itself is understood. As far as the word goes, God can be conceived not to exist. In reality, he cannot. But how has the fool said in his heart what he could not conceive, or how is it that he could not conceive what he said in his heart, since it is the same to say in the heart and to conceive? But if really, nay, since really he both conceived because he said in his heart, and did not say in his heart because he could not conceive. There is more than one way in which a thing is said in the heart or conceived, for in one sense an object is conceived when the word signifying it is conceived, and in another when the very entity, which the object is understood. In the former sense, then, God can be conceived not to exist, but in the latter, not at all. For no one who understands what fire and water are can conceive fire to be water, in accordance with the nature of the facts themselves, although this is possible according to the words. So then, no one who understands what God is can conceive that God does not exist, although he says these words in his heart, either without any, or with some foreign signification. For God is that than which a greater cannot be conceived. And he who thoroughly understands this, assuredly understands that this being so truly exists, that not even in concept can it be non-existent. Therefore he who understands that God so exists cannot conceive that he does not exist. I thank thee, gracious Lord, I thank thee, because what I formerly believed by thy bounty, I now so understand by thine illumination, that if I were unwilling to believe that thou dost exist, I should not be able not to understand this to be true. Chapter 5. God is whatever it is better to be than not to be, and He, as the only self-existent being, creates all things from nothing. What art thou then, Lord God, than whom nothing greater can be conceived? But what art thou, except that which, as the highest of all beings, alone exists through itself, and creates all other things from nothing? For whatever is not, this is less than a thing which can be conceived of. But this cannot be conceived of thee. What good, therefore, does the supreme good lack, through which every good is? Therefore, thou art just, truthful, blessed, and whatever it is better to be than not to be. For it is better to be just than not just, better to be blessed than not blessed. Chapter 6. How God is sensible, sensibilis, although He is not a body. God is sensible, omnipotent, compassionate, passionless, for it is better to be these than not be. He who in any way knows is not improperly said in some sort to feel, but although it is better for thee to be sensible, omnipotent, compassionate, passionless, than not to be these things, how art thou sensible if thou art not a body, or omnipotent if thou hast not all powers, or at once compassionate and passionless? For if only corporeal things are sensible, since the senses encompass a body and are in a body, how art thou sensible, although thou art not a body, but a supreme spirit, who is superior to body? But if feeling is only cognition, or for the sake of cognition, for he who feels obtains knowledge in accordance with the proper functions of his senses, as through sight, of colors, through taste, of flavors, whatever in any way cognizes is not inappropriately said in some sort to feel. Therefore, O Lord, although thou art not a body, yet thou art truly sensible in the highest degree in respect of this, that thou dost cognize all things in the highest degree, and not as an animal cognizes through a corporeal sense. Chapter 7. How He is omnipotent, although there are many things of which He is not capable. To be capable of being corrupted or of lying is not power, but impotence. God can do nothing by virtue of impotence, and nothing has power against Him. But how art thou omnipotent if thou art not capable of all things, or if thou canst not be corrupted and canst not lie, nor make what is true false, as, for example, if thou shouldst make what has been done not to have been done, and the like? How art thou capable of all things, or else to be capable of these things is not power, but impotence? For he who is capable of these things is capable of what is not for his good, and of what he ought not to do. And the more capable of them he is, the more power have adversity and perversity against him, and the less has he himself against these. He then who is thus capable is so not by power but by impotence, for he is not said to be able because he is able of himself, but because his impotence gives something else power over him. Or by a figure of speech, just as many words are improperly applied, as when we use to be for not to be, and to do for what is really not to do, or to do nothing. For often we say to a man who denies the existence of something, it is as you say it to be, though it might seem more proper to say, it is not as you say it is not. In the same way we say, this man sits just as that man does, or this man rests just as that man does, although to sit is not to do anything, and to rest is to do nothing. So then, when one is said to have the power of doing or experiencing what is not for his good or what he ought not to do, impotence is understood in the word power. For the more he possesses this power, the more powerful are adversity and perversity against him, and the more powerless is he against them. Therefore, O Lord our God, the more truly art thou omnipotent, since thou art capable of nothing through impotence, and nothing has power against thee. Chapter 8. How He is compassionate and passionless. God is compassionate in terms of our experience, because we experience the effect of compassion. God is not compassionate in terms of His own being, because He does not experience the feeling, effectus of compassion. But how art thou compassionate and at the same time passionless? For if thou art passionless, thou dost not feel sympathy, and if thou dost not feel sympathy, thy heart is not wretched from sympathy for the wretched. But this it is to be compassionate. But if thou art not compassionate, whence cometh so great consolation to the wretched? How then art thou compassionate and not compassionate, O Lord, unless because thou art compassionate in terms of our experience and not compassionate in terms of thy being? Truly thou art so in terms of our experience, but thou art not so in terms of thine own. For when thou beholdest us in our wretchedness, we experience the effect of compassion, but thou dost not experience the feeling. Therefore thou art both compassionate, because thou dost save the wretched, and spare those who sin against thee, and not compassionate, because thou art affected by no sympathy for wretchedness. Chapter 9. How the all-just and supremely just God spares the wicked and justly pities the wicked. He is better who is good to the righteous and the wicked than he who is good to the righteous alone. Although God is supremely just, the source of his compassion is hidden. God is supremely compassionate because he is supremely just. He saveth the just because justice goes with them. He frees sinners by the authority of justice. God spares the wicked out of justice. For it is just that God, than whom none is better or more powerful, should be good even to the wicked, and should make the wicked good. If God ought not to pity, he pities unjustly. But this it is impious to suppose. Therefore God justly pities. But how dost thou spare the wicked if thou art all just and supremely just? For how, being all just and supremely just, dost thou aught that is not just? Or what justice is that to give him who merits eternal death, everlasting life? How then, gracious Lord, good to the righteous and the wicked, canst thou save the wicked, if this is not just, and thou dost not aught that is not just? Or since thy goodness is incomprehensible, is this hidden in the unapproachable light wherein thou dwellest? Truly in the deepest and most secret parts of thy goodness is hidden the fountain whence the stream of thy compassion flows. For thou art all just and supremely just, yet thou art kind even to the wicked, even because thou art all supremely good. For thou wouldst be less good if thou wert not kind to any wicked being. For he who is good both to the righteous and the wicked is better than he who is good to the wicked alone. And he who is good to the wicked both by punishing and sparing them is better than he who is good by punishing them alone. Therefore thou art compassionate because thou art all supremely good. And although it appears why thou dost reward the good with goods and the evil with evils, yet this at least is most wonderful, why thou, the all and supremely just, who lackest nothing, bestowest goods on the wicked and on those who are guilty toward thee. The depth of thy goodness, O God, the source of thy compassion appears and yet is not clearly seen. We see whence the river flows, but the spring whence it arises is not seen. For it is from the abundance of thy goodness that thou art good to those who sin against thee, and in the depth of thy goodness is hidden the reason for this kindness. For although thou dost reward the good with goods and the evil with evils, out of goodness, yet this the concept of justice seems to demand. But when thou dost bestow goods on the evil, and it is known that the supremely good hath willed to do this, we wonder why the supremely just has been able to will this. O compassion, from what abundant sweetness and what sweet abundance dost thou well forth to us! O boundless goodness of God, how passionately should sinners love thee! For thou savest the just, because justice goeth with them. But sinners thou dost free by the authority of justice, those by the help of their deserts, these although their deserts oppose, those by acknowledging the goods thou hast granted, these by pardoning the evils thou hatest. O boundless goodness, which dost so exceed all understanding, let that compassion come upon me, which proceeds from thy so great abundance. Let it flow upon me, for it wells forth from thee. Spare in mercy, avenge not in justice. For though it is hard to understand how thy compassion is not inconsistent with thy justice, yet we must believe that it does not oppose justice at all, because it flows from goodness, which is no goodness without justice, nay, that it is in true harmony with justice. For if thou art compassionate only because thou art supremely good, and supremely good only because thou art supremely just, truly thou art compassionate even because thou art supremely just. Help me, just and compassionate God, whose light seek. Help me to understand what I say. Truly then thou art compassionate even because thou art just. Is then thy compassion born of thy justice? And dost thou spare the wicked, therefore, out of justice? If this is true, my Lord, if this is true, teach me how it is. Is it because it is just that thou shouldst be so good that thou canst not be conceived better, and that thou shouldst work so powerfully that thou canst not be conceived more powerful? For what can be more just than this? Assuredly it could not be that thou shouldst be good only by requiting and not by sparing, and that thou shouldst make good only those who are not good and not the wicked also. In this way, therefore, it is just that thou shouldst spare the wicked and make good souls of evil. Finally, what is not done justly ought not to be done, and what ought not to be done is done unjustly. If then thou dost not justly pity the wicked, thou oughtest not to pity them. And if thou oughtest not to pity them, thou pitiest them unjustly. And if it is impious to suppose this, it is right to believe that thou justly pitiest the wicked. Chapter Thalarex. How he justly punishes and justly spares the wicked. God, in sparing the wicked, is just, according to his own nature, because he does what is consistent with his goodness. But he is not just according to our nature, because he does not inflict the punishment deserved. But it is also just that thou shouldst punish the wicked. For what is more just than that the good should receive goods, and the evil evils? How, then, is it just that thou shouldst punish the wicked, and at the same time spare the wicked? Or in one way dost thou justly punish, and in another justly spare them? For when thou punishest the wicked, it is just, because it is consistent with their deserts. And when, on the other hand, thou sparest the wicked, it is just, not because it is compatible with their deserts, but because it is compatible with thy goodness. For in sparing the wicked, thou art as just according to thy nature, but not according to ours, as thou art compassionate, according to our nature, and not according to thine, seeing that, as in saving us, whom it would be just for thee to destroy, thou art compassionate, not because thou feelest an affection, affectum, but because we feel the effect, effectum. So thou art just, not because thou requitest us as we deserve, but because thou dost that which becomes thee as the supremely good being. In this way, therefore, without contradiction, thou dost justly punish and justly spare. Chapter 11. How all the ways of God are compassion and truth. And yet God is just in all his ways. We cannot comprehend why of the wicked he saves these rather than those through his supreme goodness, and condemns those rather than these through his supreme justice. But is there any reason why it is not also just according to thy nature, O Lord, that thou shouldst punish the wicked? Surely it is just that thou shouldst be so just that thou canst not be conceived more just. And this thou wouldst in no wise be if thou didst only render goods to the good, and not evils to the evil. For he who requiteth both good and evil according to their deserts is more just than he who so requites the good alone. It is therefore just according to thy nature, O just and gracious God, both when thou dost punish and when thou sparest. Truly then all the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth. Psalm 25 verse 10. And yet the Lord is righteous in all his ways. Psalm 145 verse 17. And assuredly without inconsistency, for it is not just that those whom thou dost will to punish should be saved, and that those whom thou dost will to spare should be condemned. For that alone is just which thou dost will, and that alone unjust which thou dost not will. So then thy compassion is born of thy justice, and for it is just that thou shouldst be so good that thou art good in sparing also, and this may be the reason why the supremely just can will goods for the evil, but if it can be comprehended in any way why thou canst will to save the wicked. Yet by no consideration can we comprehend why, of those who are alike wicked, thou savest some rather than others through supreme goodness, and why thou dost condemn the latter rather than the former, through supreme justice. So then thou art truly sensible, sensibilis, omnipotent, compassionate, and passionless, as thou art living, wise, good, blessed, eternal, and whatever it is better to be than not to be. Chapter 12. God is the very life whereby he lives, and so of other like attributes. But undoubtedly, whatever thou art through nothing else than thyself. Therefore thou art the very life whereby thou livest, and the wisdom wherewith thou art wise, and the very goodness whereby thou art good to the righteous and the wicked, and so of other like attributes. Chapter 13. How he alone is uncircumscribed and eternal, although other spirits are uncircumscribed and eternal. No place and time contain God, but he is himself everywhere and always. He alone not only does not cease to be, but also does not begin to be. But everything that is in any way bounded by place or time is less than that which no law of place or time limits. Since then, nothing is greater than thou, no place or time contains thee, but thou art everywhere and always. And since this can be said of thee alone, thou alone art uncircumscribed and eternal. How is it, then, that other spirits also are said to be uncircumscribed and eternal? Assuredly thou art alone eternal. For thou alone among all beings, not only dost not cease to be, but also dost not begin to be. But how art thou alone uncircumscribed? Is it that a created spirit, when compared with thee, is circumscribed, but when compared with matter, uncircumscribed? For altogether circumscribed is that which, when it is wholly in one place, cannot at the same time be in another, And this is seen to be true of corporeal things alone, but uncircumscribed is that which is, as a whole, at the same time everywhere. And this is understood to be true of thee alone. But circumscribed and at the same time uncircumscribed is that which, when it is anywhere as a whole, can at the same time be somewhere else as a whole, and yet not everywhere. And this is recognized as true of created spirits. For if the soul were not as a whole in the separate members of the body, it would not feel as a whole in the separate members. Therefore thou, Lord, art peculiarly uncircumscribed and eternal, and yet other spirits also are uncircumscribed and eternal. Chapter 14. How and why God is seen and yet not seen by those who seek him. Hast thou found what thou didst seek, my soul? Thou didst seek God. Thou hast found him to be a being which is the highest of all beings, a being than which nothing better can be conceived. That this being is life itself, light, wisdom, goodness, eternal blessedness and blessed eternity, and that it is everywhere and always. For if thou hast not found thy God, how is he this being which thou hast found, and which thou hast conceived him to be, with so certain truth and so true certainty? But if thou hast found him, why is it that thou dost not feel thou hast found him? Why, O Lord our God, does not my soul feel thee, if it hath found thee? Or has it not found him whom it found to be light and truth? For how did it understand this except by seeing light and truth? Or could it understand anything at all of thee except through thy light and thy truth?
And then,
hence, if it has seen light and truth, it has seen thee. If it has not seen thee, it has not seen light and truth. Or is what it has seen both light and truth, and still it has not yet seen thee, because it has seen thee only in part, but has not seen thee as thou art? Lord my God, my Creator and Renewer, speak to the desire of my soul, what thou art other than it hath seen, that it may clearly see what it desires. It strains to see thee more, and sees nothing beyond this which it hath seen except darkness. Nay, it does not see darkness, of which there is none in thee, but it sees that it cannot see farther because of its own darkness. Why is this, Lord, why is this? Is the eye of the soul darkened by its infirmity, or dazzled by thy glory? Surely it is both darkened in itself and dazzled by thee. Doubtless it is both obscured by its own insignificance and overwhelmed by thy infinity. Truly it is both contracted by its own narrowness and overcome by thy greatness. For how great is that light from which shines every truth that gives light to the rational mind? How great is that truth in which is everything that is true, and outside which is only nothingness and the false? How boundless is the truth which sees at one glance whatsoever has been made, and by whom, and through whom, and how it has been made from nothing. What purity, what certainty, what splendor where it is, assuredly more than a creature can conceive. Chapter 15. He is greater than can be conceived. Therefore, O Lord, thou art not only that than which a greater cannot be conceived, but thou art a being greater than can be conceived. For since it can be conceived that there is such a being, if thou art not this very being a greater than thou can be conceived, but this is impossible. Chapter 16. This is the unapproachable light wherein he dwells. Truly, O Lord, this is the unapproachable light in which thou dwellest, for truly there is nothing else which can penetrate this light, that it may see thee there. Truly, I see it not, because it is too bright for me. And yet whatsoever I see through it, as the weak eye sees what it sees through the light of the sun, which in the sun itself it cannot look upon. My understanding cannot reach that light, for it shines too bright. It does not comprehend it, nor does the eye of my soul endure to gaze upon it long. It is dazzled by the brightness, it is overcome by the greatness, it is overwhelmed by the infinity, it is dazed by the largeness of the light. O supreme and unapproachable light, O whole and blessed truth, how far art thou from me, who am so near to thee? How far removed art thou from my vision, though I am so near to thine? Everywhere thou art wholly present, and I see thee not. In thee I move, and in thee I have my being, and I cannot come to thee. Thou art within me, and about me, and I feel thee not. Chapter 17. In God is harmony, fragrance, sweetness, pleasantness to the touch, beauty after his ineffable manner. Still thou art hidden, O Lord, from my soul in thy light and thy blessedness, and therefore my soul still walks in its darkness and wretchedness, for it looks and does not see thy beauty. It hearkens and does not hear thy harmony. It smells and does not perceive thy fragrance. It tastes and does not recognize thy sweetness. It touches and does not feel thy pleasantness. For thou hast these attributes in thyself, Lord God, after thine ineffable manner, who hast given them to objects created by thee after their sensible manner. But the sinful senses of my soul have grown rigid and dull, and have been obstructed by their long listlessness. Chapter 18. God is life, wisdom, eternity, and every true good. Whatever is composed of parts is not wholly one. It is capable, either in fact or in concept, of dissolution. In God, wisdom, eternity, etc., are not parts, but one, and the very whole which God is, or unity itself, not even in concept divisible. And lo, again confusion, lo, again grief and mourning meet him who seeks for joy and gladness. My soul now hoped for satisfaction, and lo, again it is overwhelmed with need. I desired now to feast, and lo, I hunger more. I tried to rise to the light of God, and I have fallen back into my darkness. Nay, not only have I fallen into it, but I feel that I am enveloped in it. I fell before my mother conceived me. Truly, in darkness I was conceived, and in the cover of darkness I was born. Truly, in him we all fell, in whom we all sinned. In him we all lost, who kept easily and wickedly lost to himself and to us that which when we wish to seek it we do not know. When we seek it we do not find. When we find, it is not that which we seek. Do thou help me for thy goodness' sake. Lord, I sought thy face. Thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me. Psalm 27, verse 8. Free me from myself toward thee. Cleanse, heal, sharpen, enlighten the eye of my mind that it may behold thee. Let my soul recover its strength, and with all its understanding let it strive toward thee, O Lord. What art thou, Lord? What art thou? What shall my heart conceive thee to be? Assuredly thou art life, thou art wisdom, thou art truth, thou art goodness, thou art blessedness, thou art eternity, and thou art every true good. Many are these attributes. My straitened understanding cannot see so many at one view that it may be gladdened by all at once. How then, O Lord, art thou all these things? Are they parts of thee, or is each one of these rather the whole which thou art? For whatever is composed of parts is not altogether one, but is in some sort plural and diverse from itself, and either in fact or in concept is capable of dissolution. But these things are alien to thee, than whom nothing better can be conceived of. Hence there are no parts in thee, Lord, nor art thou more than one. But thou art so truly a unitary being, and so identical with thyself, that in no respect art thou unlike thyself. Rather thou art unity itself, indivisible by any conception. Therefore, life and wisdom and the rest are not parts of thee, but all are one. And each of these is the whole, which thou art, and which all the rest are. In this way, then, it appears that thou hast no parts, and that thy eternity, which thou art, is nowhere and never a part of thee, or of thy eternity. But everywhere thou art as a whole, and thy eternity exists as a whole forever. Chapter 19. He does not exist in place or time, but all things exist in him. But if through thine eternity thou hast been and art and wilt be, and to have been is not to be destined to be, and to be is not to have been or to be destined to be, how does thine eternity exist as a whole forever? Or is it true that nothing of thy eternity passes away, so that it is not now, and that nothing of it is destined to be, as if it were not yet? Thou wast not then yesterday, nor wilt thou be tomorrow, but yesterday and today and tomorrow thou art. Or rather, neither yesterday nor today nor tomorrow thou art, but simply thou art outside all time. For yesterday and today and tomorrow have no existence except in time. But thou, although nothing exists without thee, nevertheless dost not exist in space or time, but all things exist in thee. For nothing contains thee, but thou containest all. Chapter 20. He exists before all things and transcends all things, even the eternal things. The eternity of God is present as a whole with him, while other things have not yet that part of their eternity which is still to be, and have no longer that part which is past. Hence thou dost permeate and embrace all things. Thou art before all and dost transcend all, and of a surety thou art before all, for before they were made, thou art. But how dost thou transcend all? In what way dost thou transcend those beings which will have no end? Is it because they cannot exist at all without thee, while thou art in no wise less, if they should return to nothingness? For so, in a certain sense, thou dost transcend them. Or is it also because they can be conceived to have an end? But thou by no means. For so they actually have an end in a certain sense, but thou in no sense. And certainly, what in no sense has an end, transcends what is ended in any sense. Or in this way also dost thou transcend all things, even the eternal, because thy eternity and theirs is present as a whole with thee, while they have not yet that part of their eternity which is to come, just as they no longer have that part which is past. For so thou dost ever transcend them, since thou art ever present with thyself, and since that to which they have not yet come is ever present with thee. Chapter 21. Is this the age of the age, or ages of ages? The eternity of God contains the ages of time themselves, and can be called the age of the age, or ages of ages. Is this then the age of the age, or ages of ages? For as an age of time contains all temporal things, so thy eternity contains even the ages of time themselves. And these are indeed an age, because of their indivisible unity, but ages because of their endless immeasurability. And although thou art so great, O Lord, that all things are full of thee, and exist in thee, yet thou art so without all space, that neither midst, nor half, nor any part, is in thee. Chapter 22. He alone is what he is and who be is. All things need God for their being and their well-being. Therefore thou alone, O Lord, art what thou art, and thou art he who thou art. For what is one thing in the whole and another in the parts, and in which there is any mutable element, is not altogether what it is. And what begins from non-existence, and can be conceived not to exist, and unless it subsists through something else, returns to non-existence. And what has a past existence, which is no longer, or a future existence, which is not yet, this does not properly and absolutely exist. But thou art what thou art, because whatever thou art at any time or in any way, thou art as a whole and forever. And thou art he who thou art, properly and simply, for thou hast neither a past existence nor a future, but only a present existence, nor canst thou be conceived as at any time non-existent. But thou art life, and light, and wisdom, and blessedness, and many goods of this nature, and yet thou art only one supreme good. Thou art all sufficient to thyself, and needest none. And thou art he whom all things need for their existence and well-being. Chapter 23. This good is equally Father and Son and Holy Spirit, and this is a single necessary being, which is every good and holy good and the only good. Since the word is true and is truth itself, there is nothing in the Father who utters it which is not accomplished in the word by which he expresses himself. Neither is the love which proceeds from Father and Son unequal to the Father or the Son, for Father and Son love themselves and one another in the same degree in which what they are is good. Of supreme simplicity nothing can be born, and from it nothing can proceed, except that which is this, of which it is born, or from which it proceeds. This good thou art, thou God the Father, this is thy word, that is thy Son. For nothing other than what thou art, or greater or less than thou, can be in the word by which thou dost express thyself. For the word is true as thou art truthful. And hence it is truth itself, just as thou art. No other truth than thou. And thou art of so simple a nature, that of thee nothing can be born other than what thou art. This very good is the one love common to thee and to thy Son, that is the Holy Spirit proceeding from both. For this love is not unequal to thee or to thy Son, seeing that thou dost love thyself and him, and he thee and himself, to the whole extent of thy being and his. Nor is there aught else proceeding from thee and from him, which is not unequal to thee and to him. Nor can anything proceed from the supreme simplicity, other than what this, from which it proceeds, is. But what each is separately, this is all the Trinity at once, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, seeing that each separately is none other than the supremely simple unity, and the supremely unitary simplicity, which can neither be multiplied nor varied. Moreover, there is a single necessary being. Now this is that single necessary being, in which is every good, nay, which is every good, and a single entire good, and the only good. Chapter 24. Conjecture as to the character and the magnitude of this good. If the created life is good, how good is the creative life? And now, my soul, arouse and lift up all thy understanding, and conceive so far as thou canst, of what character and how great is that good. For if individual goods are delectable, conceive in earnestness how delectable is that good which contains the pleasantness of all goods, and not such as we have experienced in created objects, but as different as the creator from the creature. For if the created life is good, How good is the creative life? If the salvation given is delightful, how delightful is the salvation which has given all salvation? If wisdom in the knowledge of the created world is lovely, how lovely is the wisdom which has created all things from nothing? Finally, if there are many great delights in delectable things, what and how great is the delight in him who has made these delectable things? Chapter 25. What goods and how great belong to those who enjoy this good? Joy is multiplied in the blessed from the blessedness and joy of others. Who shall enjoy this good? And what shall belong to him and what shall not belong to him? At any rate, whatever he shall wish shall be his, and whatever he shall not wish shall not be his. For these goods of body and soul will be such as eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither has the heart of man conceived. Isaiah 64 verse 4, 1 Corinthians 2 verse 9. Why then dost thou wander abroad, slight man, in thy search for the goods of thy soul and thy body? Love the one good in which are all goods, and it sufficeth. Desire the simple good which is every good, and it is enough. For what dost thou love, my flesh? What dost thou desire, my soul? There is whatever ye love, whatever ye desire. If beauty delights thee, there shall the righteous shine forth as the sun. Matthew 13 verse 43. If swiftness or endurance or freedom of body, which naught can withstand, delight thee, they shall be as angels of God. Because it is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. 1 Corinthians 15 verse 44. In power, certainly, though not in nature. If it is a long and sound life that pleases thee, there a healthful eternity is, and an eternal health. For the righteous shall live forever, Wisdom 5, verse 15, and the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord, Psalm 37, verse 39. If it is satisfaction of hunger, they shall be satisfied when the glory of the Lord hath appeared, Psalm 17, verse 15. If it is quenching of thirst, they shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, Psalm 36, verse 8. If it is melody, there the choirs of angels sing forever before God. If it is any not impure but pure pleasure, thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures, O God. Psalm 36 verse 8. If it is wisdom that delights thee, the very wisdom of God will reveal itself to them. If friendship, they shall love God more than themselves, and one another as themselves. And God shall love them more than they themselves, for they love him and themselves and one another through him, and he himself and them through himself. If concord, they shall all have a single will. If power, they shall have all power to fulfill their will as God to fulfill his. For as God will have power to do what he wills through himself, so they will have power through him to do what they will. For as they will not will aught else than he shall will whatever they will, and what he shall will cannot fail to be. If honor and riches, God shall make his good and faithful servants rulers over many things. Luke 12 verse 42. Nay, they shall be called sons of God and gods, and where his son shall be, there they shall be also, heirs indeed of God and joint heirs with Christ. Romans 8 verse 17. If true security delights thee, undoubtedly they shall be as sure that those goods, or rather that good, will never and in no wise fail them, as they shall be sure that they will not lose it of their own accord, and that God, who loves them, will not take it away from those who love him against their will, and that nothing more powerful than God will separate him from them against his will and theirs. But what or how great is the joy where such and so great is the good? Heart of man, needy heart, heart acquainted with sorrows, nay, overwhelmed with sorrows, how greatly wouldst thou rejoice if thou didst abound in all these things? Ask thy inmost mind whether it could contain its joy over so great a blessedness of its own. Yet assuredly, if any other whom thou didst love altogether as thyself possessed the same blessedness, thy joy would be doubled, because thou wouldst rejoice not less for him than for thyself. But if two, or three, or many more had the same joy, thou wouldst rejoice as much for each one as for thyself, if thou didst love each as thyself. Hence, in that perfect love of innumerable blessed angels and sainted men, where none shall love another less than himself, every one shall rejoice for each of the others as for himself. If then the heart of man will scarce contain his joy over his own so great good, how shall it contain so many and so great joys? And doubtless, seeing that everyone loves another so far as he rejoices in the other's good, and as in that perfect felicity each one should love God beyond compare, more than himself and all the others with him, so he will rejoice beyond reckoning in the felicity of God, more than in his own and that of all the others with him. But if they shall so love God with all their heart and all their mind and all their soul, that still all the heart and all the mind and all the soul shall not suffice for the worthiness of this love. Doubtless they will so rejoice with all their heart and all their mind and all their soul, that all the heart and all the mind and all the soul shall not suffice for the fullness of their joy. Chapter 26. Is this joy which the Lord promises made full? The blessed shall rejoice according as they shall love, and they shall love according as they shall know. My God and my Lord, my hope and the joy of my heart, speak unto my soul and tell me whether this is the joy of which thou tellest us through thy Son. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full. John 16, verse 24. For I have found a joy that is full, and more than full. For when heart and mind and soul and all the man are full of that joy, joy beyond measure will still remain. Hence, not all of that joy shall enter into those who rejoice, but they who rejoice shall wholly enter into that joy. Show me, O Lord, show thy servant in his heart whether this is the joy into which thy servants shall enter, who shall enter into the joy of their Lord. But that joy, surely, with which thy chosen ones shall rejoice, eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man. Isaiah 64, verse 4, 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9. Not yet, then, have I told or conceived, O Lord, how greatly those blessed ones of thine shall rejoice. Doubtless they shall rejoice according as they shall love, and they shall love according as they shall know. How far they will know thee, Lord, then, and how much they will love thee. Truly, eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man in this life, how far they shall know thee, and how much they shall love thee in that life. I pray, O God, to know thee, to love thee, that I may rejoice in thee. And if I cannot attain to full joy in this life, may I at least advance from day to day, until that joy shall come to the full. Let the knowledge of thee advance in me here and there be made full. Let the love of thee increase, and there let it be full, that here my joy may be great in hope, and there full in truth. Lord, through thy Son thou dost command, nay, thou dost counsel us to ask, and thou dost promise that we shall receive that our joy may be full. I ask, O Lord, as thou dost counsel through our wonderful counselor, I will receive what thou dost promise by virtue of thy truth that my joy may be full. Faithful God, I ask, I will receive that my joy may be full. Meanwhile, let my mind meditate upon it. Let my tongue speak of it. Let my heart love it. Let my mouth talk of it. Let my soul hunger for it. Let my flesh thirst for it. Let my whole being desire it until I enter into thy joy, O Lord, who art the three and the one God, blessed forever and ever. Amen.